Our job is to win games, and we're winning games right now. Why would I play him over Nikola or Trey Lyles with how well they're playing right now?
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd, and I am the lead fantasy analyst over at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter at redrock_beeble. Lots to talk about today. We're going to have the 10-game recap of Wednesday's action. We're going to preview Thursday's 5-game slate. Going to continue on with our two new segments, the question of the day and the player of the day, which someone did suggest that I call the bloke of the day. So maybe we'll do that, the bloke of the day. Now that I say it out loud, I'm not sure I'm going to roll with it, but we're still looking for a good title for that segment. So I am still going to be thinking. But at this point, we're just going to go with the player discussion of the day, which we do just before we do the DFS portion of the show. And it's going to vary. Yesterday, I talked about Jahlil Okafor at length. And something I forgot to add to that Jahlil Okafor discussion, for all this talk about him getting in shape, hasn't even played for the G League team. If you want to get into game shape, go play for the G League team. Just a really, really bizarre situation all around. And all the shade getting thrown at Philadelphia seems a little misplaced given how he has behaved. But I talked about that quite a bit yesterday. We got lots to talk about today, of course. So
let's get to it.
Apologies if you did tweet me today. Once Jeff Teague went down,
my name is Jeff.
I was just getting smashed. Obviously, I have to do work as well, so I'm working on Basketball Monster. I'm writing stuff up. I'm preparing the podcast, doing all that sort of stuff, and just hundreds, literally hundreds of questions pouring in. And I couldn't get to everyone's questions. I put as many thoughts as I could out there about the Jeff Teague situation. I'm going to talk about that on today's show as well. But let's start off where we start off most shows, and that is the monstrous line of the night. And it goes to Anthony Davis.
Me, time, charged.
Charged.
Totally charged, Tony.
Totally charged, Dan.
Spot on, Tone.
Yep. Tone was charged. Tone was spot on. Tone Davis took full advantage of the Brooklyn Nets front court, as many big men have done all season. 33-11 for Davis. 4 triples, 2 assists, 1 steal, 6 blocks, 11 of 19 from the field, and 7 of 8 from the free throw line. He's the 6th ranked player this season. He's playing 35 minutes a game. He's played 29 games. He's missed, how many games? He's missed 4 games so far this season. Yeah, there's been a few scary moments where he's left games early, maybe 2 of those or 3 of those. So actually, let's have a look. There's been 3 games that he has left early as well, but only missed the 5 games, this season, but putting up fantastic numbers, even alongside Boog Cousins. 25 and 10.5, 0.73s, 2.5 assists, over a steal, over 2 blocks, 57, 80, and 40 as his percentages. So we're looking at a true shooting of almost 65%. Tone Davis has been fantastic, and you were able to get him at a pretty nice spot in drafts. He's returning that same sort of value. And of course, the only thing you really worry about with him is the injuries. But he's been okay the last couple of years. 75 games last year. Yeah, missed 5 already so far this season. So we're looking at on pace for around that 75-74 mark again this year, which would be another really strong return. I don't know how long it's going to take for him to shed that injury-prone label, but going by history of people commenting on the NBA, probably never. But we will see how that goes. The waiver wire line of the night is also your young gun of the night, and it's Bogdanović of the Sacramento Kings. 16-3-8 for Bogdan, 3 threes, 4 steals, 1 block, 6 of 9 from the field, 1 of 1 from the free throw line. Now, on yesterday's podcast, I said, is Josh Richardson the Heat's best player? I feel more confident about saying that Bogdanović is the Kings' best player. You know my take about Bogdan being better than Buddy Hield, and whenever Buddy has a big game, someone always tweets that back to me. Oh, yeah, Hield better than Bogdanović. I will comfortably take Bogdanović over Hield pretty much every day of the week. He has a decently consistent role, which is about the only positive thing you can say about this Kings team. Even though they did beat the Cavs today, in terms of getting consistency out of any of the players, it's really up in the air what Dave Yeager does. But Bogdanović is a top 100 player over the last 2 weeks in 29 minutes, averaging 12, 3, and 3.5, 2 threes, a steal on 58, 63, and 50% shooting. There are a few things there that aren't realistic. The 50% shooting, the 58% from the field, and also the 63% from the line. That will come up. But he is a good guy getting assists. 3.6 over that time, a steal a game, 2 threes. He does have value, and he probably should be owned in all 12-team leagues. The problem we're going to have is going to be consistency and what they do in terms of his role, but he is the best passer on this team, I would say, and he should be running a lot of stuff, especially while De'Aaron Fox is out, who's more of a scorer. Despite the fact that Fox can't shoot, people think that makes him a Ricky Rubio, Rajon Rondo type of point guard, when he's not. He's not this guy that's just looking for assists. He's not that. He's a scorer who can't shoot. So yeah, Bogdanović is the best creator on this team. He's a good shooter. He's a strong defender also. So I do like I like his prospects. The thing that is handbreaking him, of course, is Jaeger. But his numbers recently have been relatively consistent, whether he's started or come off the bench. Over the last 10 games, he's played 30, 33, 33, 29. A weird 18-minute game in his first start, whatever that bullshit was. 33, 29, 29, and 31. So some relative consistency in his playing time, because I believe that Jaeger is actually realizing that Bogdanović is their best player and needs that consistency. And I don't care if he comes off the bench. I don't care if he starts. I just want him to play 30 minutes a night. And that's where we're at the moment, and he's putting up some good numbers. The dart of the night. I tell a man's not hot. Julius Randle. Ooh, yuck. 6 points, 3 rebounds, a 0-0, 2 of 5 from the field, 2 of 6 from the line, in large part because he played just 11 minutes. Since Brook Lopez went down, he played 8 minutes. Cool, work that one out. 24 minutes and had 21 and 10. Brilliant, fantastic. 23 minutes, 16 and 9. Great. And then 19 minutes for 16 and 7, and then down to 11. I am sure that Luke Walton... let's try again. I'm sure that Lakers fans are getting pissed with Luke Walton. I am not convinced that he is a good coach. In fact, I think that at the moment he is not, and he is a bad coach. Yes, he could get better, but some of these decisions are infuriating. I know many, and I'm not the biggest Julius Randle fan out there. I know Matt Smith's a huge Randle fan. There are plenty of people who really like Randle, and I've been impressed with what he's done this season. But the way he's being used is outright baffling to me, and I am sure there is organizational pressure on that based on what they're going to do with him in the offseason. And to me, yeah, Anthony Irwin, the host of Locked On Lakers, had some good tweets about this today or yesterday. I don't remember what day it was, talking about how the Lakers used to have this excellence based on former players being so good and coming back to the team when other teams were doing the same thing. It's just that their former players were better than everyone else's. But now that other teams have moved into the 21st century, the Lakers are getting a little bit left behind in that sort of realm. So it is something that is worth monitoring. Seeing what happens with them in the offseason is going to be very, very interesting. And Randall's future is up in the air, but he is your dart of the night. I would still own him in 12-team leagues, despite this sort of dicking around that's going on. He could play 26 in the next game. We just literally have no idea what Walton's going to do. And that's it's a pretty sad state of affairs for Randle and for Lakers fans, unfortunately. Now it's time for me to get into question time. And as I said, I'm going to tweet this out every day, and you guys can send in any question. It doesn't have to be fantasy related. In fact, it's probably better if it's not fantasy related. And if you tweet me a question specifically about your team, I'm probably not going to answer that, because it's going to be interesting to one person and one person only, and that's you most of the time. So general questions, basketball related, NBA related, general fantasy questions, or general life questions, movie reviews, food discussions, whatever. Just something to break up the show at this point. Just throw something else out there and introduce another section to the show. So today's question comes from Francisco Santos, who's on Twitter at Francisco_91, and he says, do you think that non-American players in the NBA are usually underrated or need to prove a little more of their value in comparison to American players? Or are things changing with players like Dirk, Ginobili, Parker, and others? I think it's a really good question, and it applies to other things as well, which I'll talk about. But yes, I do think that non-American players do need to prove more, because people still have this, and I'm not, probably the majority of people that listen to this podcast or are super, super into the NBA and digest it on a daily basis and read articles and read blogs and listen to all these podcasts, they don't think that. But the casual fan, yeah, absolutely. Oh man, another soft Euro. Why are we drafting these soft Euros? When half of the guys that Euros are drafted, if you looked at them the wrong way, they'd probably literally kill you. Like Nikola Jokic is a bad dude. Like, he would hurt you. Yusuf Nurkic is a bad guy. Like, these aren't soft players. And I think that's going to take a while for people to get over. And often, you'll hear this, and you'll see it all the time. Like, you talk about Luka Doncic as the number one prospect heading into this draft, and the amount of discussions I've had with people, man, nah, give me Michael Porter. This is before injuries. Give me Porter. Give me Bagley. They've done it against American competition, not against these soft Euros. Like it is definitely something that's pervasive amongst fandom. Whether it's pervasive amongst people in the NBA in decision making areas, I don't think that's the case. I think they really do recognize the talent of these guys and understand that, you know, for a league that's 20% maybe made up of international players, 25%. I'm making that number up, but it seems about right. I'm pretty sure that the people in positions of power understand that, especially when we've got stars like Porzingis, like Jani, like Jokic, these players who are coming from other countries. Karl Anthony Towns, they really wouldn't call him an international player. Yeah, Ben Simmons coming along, Joel Embiid. Look, these are all international guys, and it is starting to change a little bit of the perception, but there is still that, especially for players who don't go to college in the States. So Embiid, Simmons, these guys did go to college in the States. I guess they're considered American as such, whereas guys like Jani, you know, Porzingis, the guys, Jokic, who come from overseas teams, they're looked down on a little bit more. But I think it's a good question, and I get it all the time. Whenever I have arguments with people who don't follow me and come into my mentions and tell me that Derrick Rose is an MVP and that Rajon Rondo is the greatest point guard to ever live and whatever other bullshit arguments they want to have, that Jimmy Butler's an athlete and he should play 45 minutes a night without getting tired, the standard argument I get back is, man, you're in Australia. What would you know? You're not even American. You wouldn't know anything about basketball. Stick to soccer, I get, which I don't understand. Or stick to rugby, which again, I know nothing about. So I haven't, they're not even that big a games here. Rugby is definitely not our national game, but I get that all the time from these casual type NBA fans who think they know what they're talking about. So it does pervade across the across fandom in a lot of areas, but in terms of higher ups, I don't think it's too much of a problem. So thank you for your question, Francisco. I do think that is something that is worth mentioning. All right, let's get into talking about these games now, breaking down the action that went on in the NBA on, what day was it? On Wednesday, where we had a full 10-game slate, so lots of action going on there. The first game, the Dallas Mavericks and the Indiana Pacers. Dirk, second game of a back-to-back, 26 minutes each night. People were really worried about him in the preseason. He's got to play 20 minutes a night. He's going to rest all the time. I wasn't as down on him as that. I said, I don't think that's the case. I think there's a distinct chance he plays more minutes this season than he did last season because he was battling Achilles problems last year. But I didn't think he was going to have his most efficient shooting season out of the last 4 years, which is what he's done this season. And that is really fueling his numbers at the moment. And if he's on a wire, go and grab him. I'm not sure how high his upside is, and I think the shooting may regress, but it's Dirk. You can't really ever question his shooting. But we're talking about a guy who's at like 48% from the field and was like 42% the last 3 years, so it's a significant jump. He had 15-7 with a 1-1 in 26 minutes on a back-to-back. It doesn't get much better than that. It gets better for the pencil. He was terrible, 13-2-2 in 31 minutes, while Dennis Smith Jr. played 29 and had 9-4-1. I like the 29 minutes, but still not really giving the value. And plenty of people have asked that question. Is he a guy that I can drop in, say, a 10-10 league to add one of these hot free agents? I still, in most cases, if I'm sitting pretty well, I would hold, but I could understand with the reticence that Rick Carlisle seems to have as to playing him 35 a night and the return of Seth Curry at some point, although I get the feeling we might. I legitimately think there's a 25% chance that Seth Curry does not play at all this season. I think that's a possibility going by the words that he says and by Carlisle saying it. Basically, they're going to return at some month, we hope. It won't be December. We got that one wrong. And just the fact that we're not saying, oh, it won't be long. They're saying, oh, we think they'll return during some month. It went from day to day to week to 2 week to 2 week. And now it's like, oh, maybe in some month he'll be back. And him and Dorian Finney-Smith and Josh McRoberts all grouped in together in that. So that is something that is worth paying attention to. I wouldn't be holding Seth in majority of leagues. Yogi Ferrell had 13-3-4 in 31 minutes. He is more of a streamer type option. While Maxi Kleber, this is why I don't think he's a must-own 12-team league guy. 18 minutes, 5-5 after yesterday's massive explosion. It's just too unpredictable as to what he's going to do. The numbers are there. He was fine to go and add if he wanted to, but he's not a must-own for this particular reason. On the Pacers, Victor Oladipo was out. He's also going to miss Friday's game. So Lance Stephenson has significant value. He had 16-15-5 in 36 minutes, Stevo. 2 triples, 2 steals. Good shooting percentage, a horrible turnover late in the game that ended up costing them the victory, I think. But Stevenson is a guy that you want to own in this short term while Oladipo is out, and he might even have value after that. He's been pushing his minutes up a little bit. Miles Turner, 16-6, 2 steals and 2 blocks, so a nice performance there, while Dazza Collison played 35 minutes, had 16-3-7. He had to have that extra playing time because Oladipo was out. That also forced more minutes for Corey Joseph and for Mighty Joe Young. Thad Young, someone who'd been, people have been worried, where's his minutes? Well, he played 35 here, so that's good. The production wasn't awesome, 11-1-3, but at least the minutes were back, while Domantas Sabonis was under 20 minutes for the second consecutive game. 6-8-4 is nice for Sabonis, but if you've got him in a 12-team league, consider his spot expendable to go and add, someone who is on the waiver wire, Lance Stevenson, Ish Smith, after we heard that Reggie Jackson's going to be out for the next 8 weeks with that ankle sprain, which is something I did talk about yesterday. Not the duration, but I thought it was going to be a pretty significant absence, and got that one right, thankfully. Boston and Charlotte, the next game to have a look at. No Jaylen Brown, no Marcus Morris, no Semi Ojeleye. Al Horford had 20-11 with 4 triples, another strong game from him. Well, Terry Rozier, this is what he does. When the minutes come, he produces 15-4-4, 3 threes, 1 steal, 2 blocks. Big numbers from Rozier. He has been super impressive pretty much any time he's been given an opportunity. But the problem is when everyone's healthy, there's Irving ahead of him, there's Marcus Smart ahead of him, there's Jaylen Brown ahead of him. So he just doesn't get enough playing time. Now, they do have a back-to-back on Wednesday, Thursday, so they're playing against Thursday. Low-volume night. We don't know if Morris or Brown will play, so Rozier is a fine guy to add for that. But after that, he'll end up probably back on the waiver wire. Irving had 21-2-8, while Smart was struggling, 5-5 in 35 minutes. I think that he can be expendable in, and I do really like him, but it's just not really happening too much for him at the moment, so I'd be okay with moving on from him. In fact, I dropped him in a league today to go and add Tyus Jones. Jason Tatum thankfully missed all 3 of his triples, 18-5 with 2 steals and 2 blocks, so still a really good night from Tates. On to the Hornets, Dwight Howard, he did what he wanted rebound-wise against the Celtics, 12-17 with 2 blocks. Poor shooting, 6 of 10 from the line and 3 of 10 from the field, but he's been really, really good this season. And Kemba Walker, 24-1-5, was decent. Nick Batum, only 7 points, but added it in the other areas. 3 boards, 3 assists, and 4 steals helped his value. While Marvin Williams went from 25 minutes to 34 minutes and had 13-9, but that's not fooling me, Marv. I'm not going and picking you up outside of 14 to 16 team leagues. This is the worry with Jez Lamb as well. 22 minutes, 8-6. If he gets 22 or not, he's not worth owning, but he was getting 27-28. In a lot of games beforehand. So that is something that can be used and can be interesting. But the problem there is, when is he going to get these minutes lowered? And that's the concern with him, is an inconsistency in his playing time. The next game, the Wizards and the Hawks. Huge, huge win for the Wizards. For the Hawks. Terrible loss for the Wizards. Otto Porter, 15-7 with 2 steals. Just really consistent numbers there. Now that Johnny Wall is back, while Beal had 20-6 with 3 steals and 2 blocks. Their bench continues to be horrific most of the time. Gortat was putrid, 2-4 in 21 minutes for Gortat, 1-6 from the field. He's owned in 85% of leagues. That is just bananas. It's way too high. While Johnny Wall was terrible, 10-1-11. You like the 11 assists, but everything else was really poor there. Kelly Oubre, 11 points. Markieff Morris is an interesting one. His minutes are on the way up, 31 here, 18-8. Now, I was all for you can drop him, that's fine. His upside's pretty limited. But I don't hate adding him now. He could have top 100 value. It probably wouldn't be top 90, but it'd be in that sort of range. He could have that sort of short-term value, and that could persist for the rest of the year. Onto the Hawks, Schroeder had 21-4-7. He just continues to put up numbers consistently, while Kent Bazemore, only 26 minutes for Bazemore, because he's not that good, but he's putting up numbers at a pretty good rate. 11-6-7 with 3 triples for Baze. He should be owned in all leagues. DeAndre Bembry, weirdly, out of the rotation the last 2 games, and he is now going down to the G League, so he is definitely out of favor. While the Baptist, John Collins, only 24 minutes here, still 8-8 with 3 blocks, and still should be someone that you own in all standard leagues. The artist, formerly known as Torian Prince, also 11-9 with 2 blocks. And Ersan Ilyasova, another 20 points, 9 rebounds, but more importantly, the minutes here for Ersan. Now, when the Undertaker, Dwayne Dedman, comes back, which might be in a week or so, it is going to have an impact on someone. Is that going to be Miles Plumlee, Tyler Kavanagh, Ersan Ilyasova? It's going to be one of those 3 guys, maybe multiple. I would say at this point, Ilyasova is going to remain starting at the 4, and Plumlee loses minutes there, as well as Kavanagh. But it is something to watch for Ersan. He's going to be streaky, but if he's on your 12-man roster, I think it's okay having him there. It's definitely not a bad thing. Marco Bellinelli got hot, 19 points in 21 minutes, but nothing to get overly excited about there. One thing on the Wizards, Mike Scott, who everyone knew was going bananas. Do I add Mike Scott? 6 points in 18 minutes. That sort of shooting, it's important to always look at that. When someone comes out with a big game, you go, what, Mike Scott, 25 points, what's going on? Oh, he hit 9 of 10 shots, something that's literally impossible for him to do on a consistent basis. That's the sort of stuff that you should be looking at when looking to, you know, is this sustainable for me to add? And the answer for that was obviously no, and we're seeing that now. The Raptors and the Thunder, big win for the Thunder, 124-107. Lowry, 13-4-10 with 3 steals. Poor shooting, but otherwise a good performance. Well, DeMar DeRozan, just, yeah, not great. 16 shots, 15 points, 6 rebounds. CJ Miles got hot, he can do that, but he doesn't do it often enough to justify owning him outside of, say, 16 to 18 team leagues. And the return of D'Lon Wright, the return of CJ Miles, is really putting a cramp on the Jedi OG Anunoby's value. 20 minutes for OG, 6 points, both from threes, continues to hit his threes, no other numbers, and he's not a 12er, he's not a 14 team league guy at this point. Whereas D'Lon, he might become a 12 team league, at least he has streaming potential, 6 and 4 in 16 minutes for him. Valanciunas, hey, he got it done, unsurprising. 16 points, 2 rebounds and a block on 7 of 9 shooting, but just 20 minutes. Continues just to be frustrating the way he gets used by Casey. I would still own in majority of cases, but yeah, 20 minutes is a real frustrating number. Onto the Thunder, big game from Russ, 38 and 13 with 2 steals. Big game from Paul George, 33 and 8 with 7 triples and a steal. Both of those guys shooting the ball efficiently, as was Carmelo Anthony. In fact, all 4 of those guys, or all 5 starters, shot over 50% from the field. Adams had 18 and 9 with 4 steals, while Mallow had 18, 4 and 4. And his play, Mallow, has actually improved recently, and he was getting close to being a droppable guy, but obviously that's not the case anymore. Andre Robertson had a steal and a block with 10 boards, but of course, if you're owning him, it's just for those steal and block numbers, so at least if he gets one of them a game, there is something there, but he's far from a must-own player. The New York Knicks and the Chicago Bulls, just some horrible, horrible coaching from Jeff Hornacek. Why would you draw up a play to have Enes Kanter take a 3 to tie the game late? I have zero idea. Kanter only played 22 minutes after that monster the last time out. 4 and 11 for him. He got smacked in the mouth a couple of times, had some bleeding going on. This is the problem with Kanter. We all know what he can do in 30 minutes, but getting 30 minutes a night sometimes can be a challenge. The Bulls are running a little bit more Mirotic market in front courts, which is going to stretch Kanter. I think that 22 is on the low end of what he should get, and it doesn't really make a ton of sense why he got this amount of playing time. But I can tell you one thing. It's not because Jeff Hornacek was playing DFS and decided to fade Kanter, as one of my Twitter followers tried to tell me, that it's definitely a conspiracy. It's definitely rigged, because Hornacek knew that Kanter was going to be highly owned, so he decided to sit him so he could go and clean up the money. That is not what happened. They did make a change, and Doug McDirt started in place of Lance Thomas. And McDirt, man, he's bad. 3-6 in 37 minutes. And I should clarify, he's bad for fantasy. He's just one of the worst fantasy players that's out there. He's been much better this season, real-life basketball, but just does nothing for fantasy at all. And I think if he started and played 36 or not, I still wouldn't want him in 14 team leagues. He is that bad. Frankie Ntilikina played 28 minutes, while Jarrett Jack just 20. That's a positive sign. 6-5-4 for Frank with a steal and a block, while Jack had 11-4-8 in his minimal playing time. But they need to really see what Frank can give them and combine with Porzingis. I am a little bit worried about Frank's 12-team viability, and if I was stashing him, I would comfortably drop for Ish, and I would comfortably drop for Tyus Jones to see how that all works out. On to the Bulls. Chrissy Dunn, 17-5-5, a bounce back from him, 2 steals and a block, while Justin Holiday had 11-9, and the Hammer Denzel Valentine, 9-9. So strongish games from those three guys there, while Robin Lopez, 11-6-4, was a nice performance. But he's fine to own as a 12-teamer, but he's hardly a high upside sort of a player. Lauri Markkanen had the game ceiling, I'd say, dunk at the end there. 12-2 for him with a steal and a block. I'm still holding, but the percentages have significantly dropped off. He was 33% from the field. He had 25% from three. Good to see him get those defensive numbers, which is not something that he does all that often. Good to see those numbers come up. But this is the problem with Nikola Mirotic as well. 25 minutes, 4-8. I still think you're holding, but this is something I spoke about ad nauseum before Markkanen came back, that when Markkanen came back, Mirotic's ceiling was really going to be significantly impacted, and he's going to fluctuate from big games to piss poor games, and he's still holding, but this is the concern with him, that that hot shooting he had to begin, the high usage he had to begin, was not going to stick. Now, it's also not going to stick at 9%, which is what he was in this game. The usage will go up, but the minutes are the concern. Well, Punch Bob only played 13 in this game. The next game, the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Denver Nuggets went to overtime. We'll start with the Nuggets. Manny Moutier out of the rotation again. Ken Fareed out of the rotation. Nikola Jokic had 22, 9 and 4 with 2 steals and a block and played 41 minutes, and he's crushing it at the moment, while Jamal Murray, the Blue Arrow, 21, 7 and 8, also clearly a must-own player. Gaz Harris struggled, but even in the struggle, 2 threes, 6 assists are some nice numbers, and he played fairly good defense for most of the game on Jim Butler, while Trey Lyles continues to look fantastic. 23 and 10 for Trey, 4 triples, 31 minutes. I think he has to be owned in all 12 team leagues, at least until Paul Millsap comes back. Farton Will Barton, I think he listens to this show. When I say that he's a good player, he goes shit. And when I say, you know what, maybe he's shit, he plays well. 28 points on, 10 of 17 shooting, 4 triples, 3 rebounds, and 5 assists in 34 minutes. At least I didn't say to drop him. But that's a good turnaround from a couple of weeks of putridity from him, while Mason Plumlee, 25 minutes, 11 and 8. He's continuing to start, but he plays minutes in the mid to low 20s, and that's not enough for me to get excited about in 12-team leagues. Now, on to the Timberwolves.
My name is Jeff.
Suffered a knee injury late in the game. I'll get this out there now. It's nothing to do with Tom Thibodeau's minutes, nothing to do with fatigue, nothing to do with like that. Gary Harris fell across his knee, and the knee bent inwards. It looked horrible. He was straight away grasped at the knee, had to be helped off the court. Now, there are a couple of things to talk about here. I don't know what the actual situation is here with Teague, but I do know a couple of things. And this is, you know, from years of watching this and reading and you know, paying attention to the NBA. The team came out and the report says Jeff Teague has a left knee injury and an MRI tomorrow. All right, when that sort of vague statement comes out, it's normally not good, and they're holding off the bad news until they get confirmation. That's usually the case. When Jabari Parker and Zach LaVine hurt their knees and tore their ACLs, Jabari has a left knee sprain. Zach LaVine has a bone bruise, I think they said, in the knee, or a knee soreness, or whatever it was. And not Jabari, but you know, LaVine, I think, walked off the court after his injury. Doctors can diagnose ACLs with fairly high accuracy. I wouldn't say what percentage it is. Straight away, they can go in and they feel the knee and they go, done. But teams aren't going to release that information. So the fact that they came out with this weirdly worded, they didn't just say it was a knock, they didn't say it was a bump, they didn't say that, you know, they said knee injury, evaluated tomorrow. That's followed up by beat reporters then saying there is definite concern in the air for Teague. Putting those things together makes me think that they're talking about a significant injury here. Now, it might not be a full ACL tear. It might be an MCL injury. It might be an 8-weeker. But there is no circumstance that Teague does not miss any time with this injury. There is zero chance of that. I'm happy to say that. The Timberwolves play on Thursday. There is zero chance that he plays in that game. Whether he avoids the ACL injury and it's just an MCL injury, I'm not sure. But we're talking, I would guess ACL. And in a better case scenario, it'll be MCL 8 to 12 would be my guess. But that is complete guesswork. And in that case, you want to own Tyus Jones. Now, Jonesy averaged 40 minutes in the 3 games he started for Teague earlier this season. Averaged 12, 3 and 7. 4 steals a game. That'll come down. And shot the ball really well. But he is a must-own guy. And the questions were pouring in. Do I add him over Ish Smith? Well, I guess that depends on what you think. Because Ish is going to have 6 to 8 weeks worth of value. If Tyus has 2 weeks, then I probably own Ish. But Jones is a much better player than Ish Smith and a much better fantasy player. So if you're going to get 4 weeks out of Tyus, I'd rather have 4 of him versus 6 of Ish. So, and I think we're getting at least 4 of Teague out, but that is just a guess on my behalf, and that is the gamble I would take. I would drop Ish for Tyus. I would do that. Do I drop Milos for Tyus? That's another question that I get. Do I drop Jordan Bell for Tyus? And they're tough questions to ask. We saw Bell today play a backup role and do pretty well in that time for the Warriors, but it wasn't the 25 minutes that he was getting when he was starting, but he still played decent minutes, and we know Zaza's going to start the majority of the games, but 22 minutes a night is probably enough for Jordan Bell to remain owned. Like, it's quite a tough judgment. Milos is going to start all season. And is he going to start getting 10 assists per game? They are really tough ones, those ones. And I would probably lean towards the consistent, or at least I know I'm going to get 30 minutes out of Milos every night. And I don't know what's happening with Tyus at this point. I wouldn't drop Jeff Teague for a start. And Bell, I guess it depends. Am I looking for little man stats or big man stats? But Bell's upside is huge. He just won't... Unless there is an injury, he won't be able to get 26 a night. And if he got 26 a night, he's a top 60 guy. But he just won't be able to get that. Unless there are injuries, which is a hard one to bank on. So there are some interesting decisions out there that need to be made. I had some weird ones. Do I drop Alec Burks for Ty Stones? Like, yes. Well, why is Alec Burks still owned? So yeah, there's plenty of decisions that you need to make with that. But I'll be looking in every league, hey, is Jones available? And then making that decision from there. Butler was great, and they've realized he is their best player. 39, 4, and 5, 3 triples in 42 minutes for Butler. Went to the line 18 times, and all those early season issues have rectified themselves. While Townsie had 14, 13, and 6 with 4 blocks. Taj had 20 and 4, and Wigo had 21 with 5 triples. Pretty empty otherwise, but that's a good line to get the efficiency there and hit those threes, but he still remains a frustrating fantasy player. The Brooklyn Nets and the New Orleans Pelicans. Quincy Acey, 18 points with 4 triples in 24 minutes. He's the guy that could potentially lose minutes for Jahlil Okafor returning, but Acey's playing well. So maybe the Nets traded just so they could get Stauskas in that second round pick. This is something I said at the time, not really Stauskas, but more the second round pick, but Acey's playing well. As for Stauskas, 24 minutes, 21 points, 7 triples, 3 rebounds, 2 assists. And you know what? Stauskas wasn't playing in Philadelphia. He doesn't need 3 weeks of conditioning to get himself right. He's out there, he's bombing threes, and that's 2 big games he's had. Now, when D'Angelo Russell comes back, someone is going to lose some minutes, and it's probably going to be Stauskas most of the time. But for now, deeper leagues, hey, he's in the rotation. Hollis Jefferson, 15, 7, and 4, while LeVert, he is good, 22, 6, and 7. And I do hope that it isn't LeVert that loses those minutes when Russell comes back. As for the Blue Swimmer, he was poor, 3 and 6 in 19 minutes. He is not a 12-team league guy, in my opinion. While Jarrett Allen backed up his big game with a subpar one, 3 of 4, 3 and 4 on 1 of 8 shooting with a steal and 2 blocks. But still, 2 blocks, a steal, getting some numbers there. And he's an interesting guy to watch. Now, I am interested in what's happening with Spencer Dinwiddie here. 22 minutes, 7, 3, and 4. That's 26 and 22 minutes in the last 2 games. Lots of talk of when, you know, Russell comes back, that Russell will play shooting guard and Dinwiddie will be the starting point guard. But I'm not so certain that'll be the case, especially with how Caris LeVert is playing. And I do worry a little bit about Dinwiddie's value. I'm not dropping him yet. And I don't think I'll drop him for Tyus just yet. But it is something that if I heard that Teague is out for the season, I would probably do that. Especially if I'm in a comfortable situation and I'm looking ahead to February, March for playoffs, that is probably a move I would make. The Pelicans, Davis was great. Boog was great, 27, 14, and 5. But I have to talk about Rajon Rondo, who scored 2 points. But he had 7 rebounds and he had 25 assists with a steal and 30 minutes after 4 straight games of 26 minutes or under. It was good to see those minutes come back up if you owned him, and those assist numbers are just unbelievable. I think someone said that was his assist total from his last 5 games combined in 1 game. So really interesting stuff. They also had 4 starters scoring 20 points. Davis, Cousins, Drew had 23, 1 and 2, and Etuan Moore got back his shooting, 20 and 4 with 4 triples in 38 minutes. Even though Rondo played more, Ian Clark remained in the rotation, had 11 points with 3 triples, and he becomes a deeper league guy to have a look at just for some points and threes that he can bring out there. The Cleveland Cavaliers and the Sacramento Kings, a loss for the Cavs on the road. LeBron, 16 points only on 17 shots. That's horrible efficiency-wise, but still had 10 rebounds, 14 assists, and 5 steals, so bringing it for you there. While Kevin Love played 30 minutes and had 23 and 5 with 3 triples and 2 blocks. No Isaiah Thomas, but he could be back on the weekend. He could be back early next week. Jay Crowder got the minutes back, 29 minutes, 8 and 5 with 2 steals and a block, but that's not enough for me to add him in 12s. While the plumber, J.R. Smith, had 15 points all from 3, and he is just a 3-point streaming type of option. On to the Kings. Another change to the starting lineup. 13 starting lineups they've used this season, and nothing makes sense with anything this team does. Frank Mason III moved into the starting lineup. Now, he was playing 22 minutes a night. De'Aaron Fox got hurt, and then he started playing fewer minutes. Played like 16 a night. And then they said, you know what? Let's start him instead. And then he somehow played fewer minutes, only 10 minutes as a starter. The logic is just astounding from Jaeger. 4 points with 2 rebounds in 10 minutes. I'm not adding Mason in 12s. I'm not adding him in 14-team leagues. They also started Malachi Richardson at power forward. Yes, Malachi Richardson, a shooting guard. They started him at power forward while Scal Labissiere was a DNP CD. Again, apparently Jaeger has spoken to Scal. Not apparently, this is what's happened. He's spoken to Scal and he's told him when he'll be back in the rotation, We just have no idea when that'll be. And yeah, there's no reason to be holding onto Scal. Obviously, no reason to really be owning Richardson either outside of extraordinarily deep leagues. 4-2 in his 16 minutes. Zach Randolph, minutes reduced once more. 20 minutes, 14-7. Still someone to hold, but I do fear that this might become closer to his norm. But in Sacramento, nothing's the norm. It changes every game. Much as it did here, is Willie Cauley-Stein moved to the bench? Because that's what you want to do. Why wouldn't you? 36 minutes for Cauley-Stein off the bench, 17-9-4. Big game there. And Budrick Hield, who had started two games in a row, went back to the bench and played 24 and had 8-2-4 with two triples. If you want to own him, fine. I just don't think that he's a good player. Plenty of people disagree with me and think that he can be some sort of star. I don't think that at all with Bud. So I'm not, especially with this dicking around of minutes, it is hard. Also awesome when you can get 30 minutes out of Vince Carter. That's fantastic. 24 points with 4 triples, 5 rebounds, a steal and a block. He was red hot in this one, no doubt, but he hadn't even played in the last week or so. That meant that Justin Jackson played fewer minutes and Kostas Koufos was a surprise DNPCD. So as I said, there's just nothing predictable about anything that the Kings are going to do, except that you know that it's going to be unpredictable. That's it. That's all there is. The Memphis Grizzlies beat the Los Angeles Lakers backed by MVP Tyreek Evans. 32-7-7 in 32 minutes for Tyreek. He was questionable in this game. Game time decision. Started, played 32 minutes and dominated. His story this season has been fantastic. And I got him, I think, in over 50% of my leagues. And I am very bloody happy about that. Jarrell Martin made the start. There was no Jamichael Green. There was no Brandon Wright. Chandler Parsons, who'd started the last game, he went back to the bench, even though he was available. So he went off the bench. And Jarrell Martin had 20-8 with 2 blocks in 32 minutes. Martin was a guy who was apparently waived in the preseason when the Grizzlies had like 18 guaranteed contracts. It was reported that he was waived. He got a reprieve, made the final cut, and now he's starting and played 32 minutes. I wouldn't be banking on this happening as a regular thing, but it's something to pay attention to. Gasol had 11-9-5 with 3 blocks, while Kobe Simmons only 17 minutes here as Mario Chalmers was somehow back in the rotation. JB Bickerstaff just throwing shit at the wall and seeing what's going to happen. 22 minutes for Chalmers, 5-1-1 with a triple one. Absolutely nothing to get excited about. But I'll tell you what is exciting. Deontay Davis, 2 blocks, 14 points in 15 minutes. I love his fantasy upside. I just got to work out if he can get shit going on in his head, much like Marquise Chris. And they are very similar players in that regard. On to the Lakers. Talked about Julius Randle's weirdness. Larry Nance, just 19 minutes, 12-9 for him, but that's a good performance. But who knows what we're going to get out of Nance. He's a borderline 12-team league guy, while Kentavious Caldwell-Pope had 16-2-2, and Jordy Clarkson, 22-4-2. He has got a definite reprieve since Lonzo Ball has been out. Josh the Hitman Hart, 30 minutes, 9-8, played some point guard. Once Lonzo's back, he's going to go back to a 20-minute role. But he is showing what he can do. He was a rookie that I was pretty interested in, just long-term, how his numbers actually look. And he's shown some really good on-court play, and you feel like he's going to be a rotation player for a long time. Brandon Ingram returned. He was on a minutes limit, so he played 44 minutes. I would hate to have think what he would have done if he hadn't have had a minutes limit. Just going to show that either A, coaches talk shit consistently, or they have no respect for medical staff and information that would lead to the preservation of their health and safety of their players. Either one of those two, whichever it is, it's not a good look. 23-4-4 with 2 blocks for Ingram. A horrific 5 of 11 from the line, but otherwise a pretty good line. Well, Andrew Bogut started, played 13 minutes. No idea why he continues to start. Kyle Kuzma, the future MVP, suffered a knee in the quad. He was putrid in this game, like just bad. 4 of 24 from the field. Now, I know I've talked plenty of times about Kuzma, saying he's not going to be able to continue this shooting, and I've looked like a dick for 3 months. Is the regression coming? I don't think it's coming this hard. I don't think he's going to shoot 17% or go 1 of 11 from 3 all that often. But none of his numbers made sense. They didn't make any sense based on what he'd done in college. Nothing of it made sense. He's still, of course, a guy you want to own, but this is the concern that when so much of his value came from high-efficiency scoring, is that when the shot falls off, is he bringing enough? Now, the 8 boards and 2 steals were good here, but it is something we want to pay attention to, because this was just a horrific, horrific shooting performance from the future MVP. The last game of the night, the Utah Jazz and the Golden State Warriors. Rocket Rodney Hood, 26 points with 5 rebounds and 3 steals in just 29 minutes as the Jazz got smashed by the Warriors. Rocket should be owned, as should the Don, who had 17-7, of course. And the Jazz sprung a surprise, and they started Thabo Sefolosha, who was out of the rotation. He played 33 minutes, had 11-8 with 2 steals and a block. He replaced Jonas Jerebko. who was a DNP CD in this game, while Joe Johnson played just 15 minutes. Birksie had 10-2-3, and Rick Rubio 10-2-2 with two steals. Still not getting it done. 26 minutes. In an 8-team league, I would drop Rubio. In a 10, I would consider it. I probably wouldn't drop him for Ish. I definitely wouldn't drop him for Ish. I probably wouldn't drop him for Tyus. But yeah, it is getting pretty close. Nothing seems to be changing with what Rubio is doing. On to the Warriors. Jordy Bell, as I said, went back to the bench. 22 minutes for him. 5-13-7, while Zaza played 14 minutes. He's the best center on this team, I would say. Maybe David West could have that argument. And it's going to be interesting to see how Kerr manages it. But he said that Pachulia is going to be the starter for the vast majority of games. There'll be some games where Bell starts as a matchup thing, and that's going to be really exciting. But if he gets 20 minutes a night, he's a must-own guy. So for now, he is a must-own guy. Clay had 15 points with three triples, and Uncle P had 15 points in his 22 minutes. Omri Caspi sprained his ankle late, 10-4. He's not a huge part of the rotation, of course, but if he misses, there's going to be some more playing time for guys like Young and Pat McCaw once Steph Curry returns. Now, McCaw moved to the bench and had 18-4. A strong, strong game from him, but Curry's return is imminent, so not a huge amount to see from Pat unless Caspi does have to miss some time. All right. That wraps up all of the action from Wednesday. I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back with the player to discuss for the day, and then look at some DFS action, so make sure you're staying tuned for that. In the meantime, I will give you a song by the band Big School, and the song is called Change Your Mind. I will see you back to talk some DFS and the player of the day in a minute or so. Segment that I still don't know what to call, the player to discuss, the player of the day. And today's one, what I'm going to do is for all Thursday shows, if you leave a comment on the YouTube video for Wednesday, I will pick a selection of, I'll pick a player from the YouTube comments from Wednesday to run on Thursday show. Otherwise, I will tweet it out the other days of the week. So today's comes from YouTube, and it is it's a dynasty-based question, and it's Jonathan Motley of the Dallas Mavericks. Now, someone's asked me about him a few times. I think it's probably the same bloke that's asked me a couple of times about Motley. And we're talking about deeper dynasty stuff here. So people who want more dynasty content, here's a bit coming from coming for the show. Motley is a two-way contract player for the Dallas Mavericks. He played for Baylor last season, three years for Baylor in college basketball. Now, in his college, his college numbers, he averaged, where are we? Okay, I just got to bring that up. I'll get to that. Yep. Okay. So his college numbers, they were pretty good, as many of these guys are when they play in college. He averaged 17 points per game, almost 10 rebounds, 2.5 assists, 1.1 blocks in 30 minutes, shooting 52% from the field and 28% from three on minimal attempts. Let's have a look now that he's gone professional, what he's done. He's played one game for the Mavericks, just 2 minutes, so it's hard to get a full judge. 4 points, one rebound, and one block. Yeah, that's too small to tell anything from. In preseason, he played 30 minutes total. He had 6 points per game in 11 minutes per game, four boards, 0.7 steals, and 0.3 blocks on some poor percentages, which is something he does need to work on. But this is a common theme for him. He can rack up some numbers when he gets the opportunity. Let's go and see what he's done in the D-League, playing for the Texas Legends. 14 games there, 34 minutes a night, almost 22 points per game, 9.8 rebounds, 1.8 assists, over a steal, over a block per game. He's hitting 0.3 triples a game at 27%, which isn't great. His free throws are a concern, 68%, 54% from the field. He's got a PER of 22. He's a positive on-off guy, plus six net rating, true shooting of 58. So his numbers are okay there, but I'm more intrigued about the block potential, the defensive potential, and his ability to put up some scores in a small period of time. Now, he's a little bit undersized. He's only 6'9". He did play some center at Baylor. He's more of a power forward there, and the thing we look at here is with Dallas, like, who's their power forward? Is it the pencil? Do they want to run him there? Is it going to be Maxi Kleber, who's been impressive this season? Or can Motley really play himself into a decent role on this team or another team? I'm going to tend to say no about it. I think he's in a similar boat to, say, Christian Wood from a couple of years ago, who looked great in college and put up these great numbers, the D-League stuff, great analytical stuff, but could never get it figured out on the court. And I get the feeling that Motley might be that player. But he is a guy to watch who does have a decently friendly game from a points, rebounds, blocks, steals point of view, and field goal percentage, which can be a really good five-stat combo. But for now, I just think he's a little bit old. He did have 4 years in college. His first year was a redshirt, so he's older than what you might think for a young guy. We're not talking about a 21-year-old. He's only 22, but he did have 4 years in college. We're not talking about a 19, 20-year-old, maybe is more what I wanted to say. And he's putting up good G League numbers. We just have to see if he can do it at any point for the big team, but the emergence of Maxi Kleber there, the presence of Harrison Barnes, and of course Dirk still going around, does limit what Motley can do. I'm not overly sold on him. It'd have to be a really, really deep dynasty, like one of the Red Rock 30 team leagues, where we've got 360, 390 players rostered for him to be one there. And even then, I don't really, really love his potential. But you guys, someone asked the question, so I'm going to throw different things out there, different comments about different players at different times. So we're going to go real deep here with John Motley, who is playing for the Mavericks. And I think we'll see a little bit more of him as the season progresses to give us a little bit more of an idea. But I think he's got some explosion, some excitement. Think of a Christian Wood, a Ken Faried with a bit more defense, perhaps, and not as good of a rebounder, but someone to pay a little bit of attention to, but you have to be playing in some pretty deep leagues to care there. Don't say I don't do anything for you deep league dynasty guys. Perfect DFS lineup on FanDuel: Rajon Rondo 47.9, Russell Westbrook 58.1, Bradley Beal 46.7, and Bogdanovic 42.6, Lance Stevenson 42.5, and Vince Carter 39.5, Tone Davis had 69.2, Jarrell Martin 34.6, and Steve-O Adams 42.8. What a perfect lineup. It's got Vince Carter and Jarrell Martin in it. The total there was 423.9, and that cost $59,800. On DraftKings, the Blue Arrow 42.25, Lance Stevenson 46.25, Vince Carter 40.25, Trey Lyles 40.5, Tone Davis 66.75, Rondo's at 48.75, Paulie George 50.5, and Jim Butler 54.5 for a total of 389.75, and that cost $49,200 dues. Now, this is only going to matter to you guys in Australia, but I have a fairly strong feeling that someone who works for DraftStars or people that work for DraftStars listen to this podcast. But DraftStars has a contest on there, the Big 400 target, and it's been jackpotting. And so far, it's like $93,000 is the prize pool for that. And it's if you get to 400 points, whoever gets over 400 splits that prize pool. Now, it's a huge prize pool. We don't have pools like that in our contest here. Yeah, if one person gets it, that's the biggest contest in a DFS thing in Australia that we've had. But it is literally impossible to get to that level. The perfect lineup yesterday on DraftStars was 382. That's if you did everything perfectly. It's the pricing is too high, given their scoring system, which is a different scoring system to FanDuel and DraftKings, to get anywhere near that 400. So I feel like it's just going to keep jackpotting and jackpotting. It's going to take just a complete shit ton of luck or someone with 100 entries in there to get some sort of weird combination. But the numbers are too high. So if you're at DraftKings, either bring that target down to 380 or 375 or drop the salaries a bit, because no one's gonna do it unless you're just doing it. It's basically like a lotto. It's like Powerball. Just throw your money in and you don't get any return. That's what it feels like. So if you are listening from DraftStars, it's too high. It is when the perfect lineup on an 8-game slate doesn't even get close to it. Really, it's an issue. The FanDuel pricing issue has been fixed over at Basketball Monster. We are going to have support for both types of contests, but we're going to go back and talk about our FanDuel pricing as we did, and still go through DraftKings as we've done on all those other shows. The first game we're going to look at is the Detroit Pistons and the Orlando Magic. We know that Reggie Jackson is out for 6 to 8 weeks, so Ish Smith will start. FanDuel has bumped his price to $5,500. There is an element of risk in using him, but I think he's still a pretty strong cash play and a tournament play, especially considering how good it is for point guards to go up against the Magic. So a really, really good spot for Ish. If you play cash, Ish Smith and Tyus Jones are going to be owned in such high percentages, it's going to be out of control. So you're going to need to want those guys in cash. Maybe pivoting away from them in tournaments might be worthwhile, but I think you're not going to be able to have a tournament lineup without one of those guys in. Otherwise, you're just not going to have the flexibility to put enough players in to actually get enough points. So that is a concern. The Magic, they released their injury report earlier in the day. They had Evan Fournier on there as questionable, Az Gordon on there as questionable, and John Isaac as questionable. Now, Fournier and Isaac both played the last game, and then about 10 minutes before going to air here, they put out their updated game notes. And in that, listed on the probable starters, Fournier was listed as a probable starter, and both Fournier and Isaac were absent from the injuries section. So I would put Fournier and Isaac closer to probable. I know that Aaron Gordon has gone through a full practice, so he is a chance to return as well. So the ability of guys like Weza Wundu to have tournament upside, or Mario Hezonja to be a cash type guy, I think is going to be pretty limited in this one, especially with the likelihood that Isaac and Fournier are both there, and a pretty decent chance that Gordon is going to join them as well. That's going to reduce some of the value of Lord Alfred Payton. He's at 7,400, which I think is a little bit too high. His numbers have been really good, averaging 39 over the last five, but I think the return, or the likely presence of Fournier and the likely return of Gordon, is going to have an impact on Alfred. Langston Galloway should assume the backup role for the Pistons. 4,400 for him, only be a tournament guy. Love the matchup again for him. He'll play backup, and with Avery Bradley out, he's going to get minutes playing the backup one and the backup two, so he's a nice GPP guy, but he is a little bit fluky with his numbers. At shooting guard, Fournier is at 5,800. I would absolutely consider that a GPP guy. His first game back, he played 30 minutes, and he was all right. He wasn't great, but he was all right, and he can comfortably get to 30 points. Kennard or DJ Augustin, I don't know if Kennard will start. I don't know if Tone Tolliver will start for Detroit. No, I don't want to use Kennard regardless. At small forward, Reggie Bullock's at 4,400. I think he will start, and I think he's not a bad cash play here. Get your 22 or 23 points. It is a possibility. He also got the ability to go for 30, and I think his floor is decently safe. So I don't mind Bullock here in this one. Jono Simmons at 5,800. If those guys return, I don't want anything to do with Simo. He put up a robust 4.8 points in the last game. I wouldn't feel comfortable about using him. While Stan Johnson at 4,000. Played 36 in the last game, but that was purely so he could match up with Lance Stephenson. I don't think that anyone in the Magic's going to have that same sort of issue with Stan, so no, that's not happening. Well, Mario Hezonja at 4,900. Hey, if Gordo's out, 4,900, I love. If Gordo's in, not interested. 4,200 for Tone Tolliver. He only played 17 minutes in the last game and had 0.7 points. If he starts and plays 30, I think that's a GPP type of a guy. While Isaac at 3,800, he doesn't have his touchback at all. And as Gordon at 7,400, I wouldn't feel great about putting him in as he returns from his injury. At center, Andre Drummond, 9,500. Drummo hasn't done well against the Magic. It is a different Magic team, of course, with Bismack Biyombo starting instead of Nick Vucevic. 9,500 is probably a little bit high for Drummo, but I would absolutely, with his 50-point upside, 55-point upside, he would be a tournament type of guy, but not the strongest one. Well, Biyombo at 5,500, I don't love his upside. He's got zero offensive game, but rebounds and blocks, that might be able to get you that 26 or 27. So I think that he is a pretty decent cash play here on FanDuel. Let's go across to DraftKings now. For GPPs, it's a similar story. Lang Galloway is at 38 and Tone Tolliver is at 38. They both have some upside. I'd prefer Galloway over Tolliver in that grouping, while Reggie Bullock's at 4,000, and I really like that for cash, as I do with Bismack, even more so on DraftKings. 4,600 is a really strong cash play for Biyombo on DraftKings. Andre Drummond at 9,400, probably lean a little bit more tournament than cash. Toby Harris at 66. against his former team, if you want to buy into that. He was super hot in the last game. I think that might push his ownership up a bit, and that might lead me to fade him. While Lord Alfred at 6,800, even if those guys return, I think that's a strong price. While Ish Smith at 4,900, as I said before, I think you're going to have Ish and or Tyus in tournaments and cash to really come close to being a profitable player. Let's go on to the next game. It is the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Milwaukee Bucks. The Bucks are favored by 2.5. The total is 213 points here. There's no way Jeff Teague plays in this one. And Aaron Brooks also missed today's game due to an illness. So there could be a real point guard issue. And that could be 40, 42 minutes for Tyus. Maybe Marcus Georges-Hunt plays some backup minutes there. Or Jim Butler handles the backup point guard role. But we could be seeing some big, big minutes for Tyus Jones. He is at 3,600. That is as absolute smashable in cash as anything. I think it has to be. It should be 100%. Rostered in cash. I think Tyus Jones, I think he's going to be that high. You're going to have him pretty much. That price is just so, so sexy. $100 above minimum. It has to be rostered. I can't see how you wouldn't at that sort of a price. Eric Bledsoe, 7,600. Been putting up some okay numbers lately, averaging 41 over his last three. That's better than okay. I don't mind him here, but I think there are better options out there, especially with those guys like Smith and Jones, as I mentioned. Dellavedova, Aaron Brooks, maybe Brooksy as a GPP guy you could have a flyer on if Thibodeau decides to do something just insanely stupid and start him, which he actually did the first game that Teague missed this season with the Achilles injury, but no. Andy Wiggins, 5,400, that's super cheap for Wigo. He had 27 today, which is value at 5,400. I don't feel good about him for cash, but at that price, I don't hate it, and I absolutely do like it for tournaments, especially on a five-game slate. Chrissy Middleton's at 7,500, feels a little bit too high, while Brogo's at 5,500. He's getting 30 minutes a night now. Hopefully that continues, but Jason Kidd, is he going to go the Jason Kidd lottery, as he said the other day? I've got no idea. But I think that for 5,500 for Brogo, I think that's a pretty good floor for cash. I really like that. Tone Snell gives me nothing. Well, Jamal Crawford could also benefit from Teague's injury. 3,700 for Jamal, absolutely a GPP type of a guy at small forward. Butler's at 89. He will also benefit from Teague's absence. Handle the ball more usage. Love Butler. That is almost a lock for me in cash along with Tyus. Well, Yanni at 11,900. You might be able to get Yanni in by playing Jones and by playing Smith and by playing some of these other cheaper guys, and that's fine. But I would probably rather spend it on Butler and save that 2,000 and get it somewhere else. Bielitsa at minimum salary, just not playing enough minutes yet to really even consider. At power forward, Taj at 5,500, still happy to lock that in cash, really happy with that price. While the Muppet, John Henson at 5,200, really a GPP guy. We don't know what Kidd is going to do, how much small ball will he go with Giannis at center. He's definitely not going to be running McCurr out there for big minutes, but Henson only played 21 in that last game and has only averaged 20 the last three times against Minnesota, but some of that's because Greg Monro was around. And of course, Miles Plumley. Gorgui Dieng at 38, just no interest. At center, Karl Anthony Towns, 10,000. Love that. Love it, love it, love it. We've seen big numbers for Bucks, people going up against the Bucks. Towns is getting almost 50 a night. Love that for Towns. While McCurr, probably the opposite of love, I would guess. Love this on DraftKings as well. There's a ton of value here. Wigo at 5,600. That's a higher price than FanDuel, but I still believe that there's a GPP upside. I would feel less comfortable about using him in cash on DraftKings. There's a bunch of guys I would use in cash and tournaments. Yanni's at 10,900. Really strong. Townsie at 8,900. Love it. Jim Butler at 77. Absolute lock. Butler, Towns, Jones. That is a great stack. I could stack them in cash. Jones is at 3,400. That is ridiculous. That is 100% own in cash and in tournaments as well. I reckon you have to get that in there. And you could see that Butler, Towns, Jones stack really working out. And I like Eric Bledsoe quite a bit on DraftKings too. 7,100 for Bledsoe, averaging 39 over the last five. Pretty decent matchup for him. I think he should be able to get to that level, yeah, relatively comfortably. Brogo is also in a good spot at 4,800. So a ton of value in that game, in particular on DraftKings for cash and for tournaments. The next game, let's get into that one. It is the Houston Rockets and the Boston Celtics. We don't know the status of a few of the Celtics guys, Jaylen Brown, Semi Ojeleye, and Marcus Morris, whereas Chris Paul is questionable for Houston. Clint Capella is also out for at least the next two games with a fracture in his heel. It sounds worse than it is, apparently, so don't expect him to miss massive, massive amounts of time. But with him out, Nene is going to get the start. Now, the thing is that the Rockets have a Thursday-Friday back-to-back, so it'll be interesting to see what they do with Nene, what they do with his minutes. I don't think he's going to be playing 30 a night. We're going to have Ryan Anderson get more playing time, PJ Tucker, Tariq Black, all those guys coming in and playing minutes at center. But with the absence of Luke Marmuta and potentially Chris Paul, that's going to stretch things thin. So we might see 24 out of Nene, 25 out of Nene, which makes him another super strong option. At point guard, Chris Paul is at 9,800. I don't think we need to go for that one, especially considering we don't know if he's going to play. While Kyrie at 8,600. And the high pace is marginally intriguing for Kyrie. He's done well against Houston before, and that's when they had Pat Beverly there. I think he's a GPP play, but not really a cash guy. Rozier at 38, that is fantastic, assuming that Jaylen is out. If Jaylen's out, that is, I'm all over Rozier at that price if Brown is out. If everyone plays, though, it's tougher to use. Even if Marcus Morris is out, I think Rozier at 3,800 is an option. Marcus Smart at shooting guard, 5,600, only in a tournament. He's been disappointing lately, only 22-point average over his last five, but he could have an increased opportunity. And we know if he gets hot and hits those threes and those numbers, they can follow along from there. Eric Gordon's at 58. I think that's a fairly strong cash play if Paul is out, which we don't know yet. Well, Jimmy Harden, 12-5. I think that you can put the value in. You can put Nene, you can put Tyus, you can put some of these cheap guys in, enabling you to get Jim. And he should be almost a 60-point lock at this point. But given some of the value, especially on things like DraftKings, where you've got those super cheap prices, he may be a fade in some cases. But you have to, if Chris Paul's out, it is hard to go past Jim, especially with some of those other cheaper options around. PJ Tucker, a small forward, 4,800, a tournament guy. If we have issues with Chris Paul, especially, going to open up some big minutes for him playing all over the place. While Ariza at 5,500, I just love that for cash. I think that he's getting 40 minutes a night. He should be able to approach 30 points. The minutes are fine. I love that for cash. Not sure how high the upside is, but I don't think it's terrible. So he's a tournament guy as well, but I think he's a really strong cash play. Jaylen's at 5,700. Not really too excited there. At power forward, Jason Tatum, 5,700. Love that. You just love it. 34 today from Tatum. I think 27, you can almost write that in pen from him, which is great at 5,700. And then upside for more. Marcus Morris, no way. While Ryan Anderson, could he get hot? Play 35 minutes? Sure. Is he bad? Yes. 4,200 makes him a tournament sort of a guy. While Tariq Black at 35, maybe. Maybe Tariq could have 25 and he could be an interesting tournament type option as a pivot from Nene. Vanilla Tice is at 4,300. Increased salary for him, so it's a little bit hard to use him here. At center, Nene is minimum salary. He's 3,500. He's got in the last five games, he had a 28-pointer. He's got tournament upside. I think he's got cash reliability to give you at least 18 points here in these minutes. I'm totally fine with using Nene in both formats. While Al Horford at 7,100 has done very well against Houston in the past. I think that there is probably limited upside for him, but I feel pretty safe about his floor for a cash game option. The DraftKings situation here, Marcus Smart, 51, a tournament type guy, and then a bunch of guys I do like for cash as well. Eric Gordon at 58 and Trevor Ariza at 53. Kyrie at 8,000 and Jim Harden at 11,400. Love Hardo at 11,400 there, but of course we know that Jim Butler is also a pretty strong guy, but not quite as high as Harden. I'd probably take Harden over Butler over on DraftKings. Nene is at 3,900, so his price isn't as appealing as what it is on FanDuel. It's still pretty good, but I wouldn't be really foaming over it as much as what I would over on FanDuel. While Tatum at 5,500 is still pretty strong. I don't feel quite as good about it as what I do on FanDuel. The Knicks and the Spurs. The Spurs are favored by 11.5, and the total is 200.5. Kawhi is listed as probable with his return from injury management. He played 26 minutes in the last game, so that's a good sign. I think he'll be okay to play, but he's not really a DFS option just yet. At point guard, Tone Parker's at 41. I actually don't mind using Tone Parker for cash. I think there are other guys out there better now that the Ish and Tyus Jones situations have appeared. But Tone's getting 24 minutes a night. He's getting around 20 points a night, and that's not too bad at that price for a cash game. Millsy at 3,700. No. Frank at 42, no. And Jarrett Jack at 47. I was going to call him Jarrett Yak with a soft J's in it, and I don't know why. He had a good game today, Yakky, at 4,700, but I don't think that's really a winning DFS play. Dan Green, Ginobili, Bryn Forbes, the shooting guard options in this game are terrible. Kawhi's at 7,300, not ready to go in with him yet, while Courtney Lee at 59 is a strong, strong cash play, but limited tournament upside. Kyle Anderson would be the guy to look at if Kawhi happens to be out. He's at 3,900 and he's ahead of Rudy Gay, but he's not going to get enough playing time to really matter. Same as Gay at 38. And Lance Thomas, Doug McDirt, I don't care who starts. They're both terrible and they both have no DFS appeal. At power forward, Porzingis.
Porzingis.
He is at 9,200. He's had some decent games recently, but against the Spurs, it is a tougher ask. And at that price, there are better ways to spend that money. So he is not someone I'm all that interested in. Same with LaMarcus Aldridge at 8,500. Just too highly priced with Kawhi back in the fold. Now at center, Kylo Quinn, the Cock Monster. 3,900 for Kyle. He is a tournament. I think he's a sneaky tournament guy. I have no real reason why. Maybe it's an Enes Kanter face smashed in, back issue, hip problem bothering him, and maybe Cock gets a bit of extra playing time. He's one of those guys that can blow up for 30 points in 18 minutes, so that does give him some weird tournament appeal, while Kanter at 68, I just think that's too high. Pau Gasol's at 6,500, just been killing people lately. I don't feel good about him at that price, though. It just feels that it's a little bit too high. On DraftKings, Porzingis is in a much better spot here. 7,900. I'm all over that. I'm all about that for cash. I think there's tournament upside. I love it. Aldridge, 7,800. More appealing, but still not quite at that right spot. While Kawhi, I'd be actually happy with using Kawhi in a tournament here. $6,000 for Kawhi. He had 28 in that last game in 26 minutes. I think he can come out here. If he plays 32 minutes, he can smash through that. That is a very, very good price for Kawhi. I wouldn't feel comfortable in cash, but in a tournament, sure. 4,900 for Courtney Lee is just baffling. It is so, so low. I am absolutely all over that for cash. I feel like there's almost no way that he gets under 27 points. Almost no way. While Frank the Tank, that's not his nickname. Let's just go back with Frankie Ntilikina. 3,700. Big minutes, poor production. Not really all that interested in him, and not a lot of other guys worth discussing on the DraftKings slate. The last game of the night. Who is it? It is the Philadelphia 76ers and the Portland Trail Blazers. Dame Lillard not on the injury report, so he should be ready to go. Justin Anderson is likely to play. Now, whether he's in the rotation or not remains to be seen. While Noah Vonleh, much like Anderson, he's questionable, but I don't even think he's going to play on a regular basis anyway. At point guard, Lillard's at 8,800. Feel okay about using him, but I still prefer those cheaper guys at point guard. 8,800 is fine. He's got definite 45-point upside in this game, whereas you got Shabazz Napier at 38. With Lillard back, his recent performances are going to fade away. TJ McConnell's at 46. Strong game from TJ in the last one. Really, really tough to rely upon him for DFS. Same with Bayless. At shooting guard, CJ McCollum's at 71. He's a tournament guy only. Hasn't quite been where he needs to be, but he does have that 50-point upside, which we like for tournaments. Well, JJ Redick at 5,500 is also a tournament type guy. Not feeling super confident in cash there with him. At small forward, Bob Cove's down to 6,400 because his numbers haven't been good. Just a 29-point average over the last five, but he does have that 50-point upside, and that makes him a GPP guy in this situation where I think he's going to have that opportunity to do it. Evan Turner started, but the minutes have been down the last two games. No interest there. Justin Anderson and Mo Harkless. Mo Harkless, maybe. Minimum salary, had 35 points in the last one. Probably fluke. But don't discount him at minimum salary. Power forward, Ed Davis at 39, no. Actually, I didn't talk about Ben Simmons because he's listed as a power forward. I thought he was a small forward still. Al-Farouq Aminu, 55, not interested. Well, Simo is at 9,000. The numbers have been a little bit down for Simo. The last time he played Portland, though, he did drop 51. And he's still averaging 36 over his last five, but I don't feel super strong about him in cash. Not interested in Šarić at 62, Amir Johnson, Trevor Booker, or Rashawn Holmes either. At center, Yusuf Nurkic, 5,800. Massive, massive drop in salary, and I am all about him in tournaments here. Yeah, he struggled. He's averaging 15 over the last three. He averages 41 against the Sixers in his last three games against them. This is definitely 45-point upside territory for Nurkic at a very, very cheap price, but using him in cash, no way. I also like Zachy Collins as a GPP guy. He had 26 points in 31 minutes in the last game. He's at 3,900. 26 points at 3,900 is an interesting low-owned possibility, but I wouldn't be going too crazy while the process. Joel Embiid, 10,700. Yeah, I feel good about that for cash. Get your 50 out of him. It shouldn't be too much of a challenge. He's averaging 51 over his last five, so he should be able to do that relatively comfortably. On DraftKings, very similar tournament type guy, Zach Collins at 36. I like Al-Farouq Aminu much more on DraftKings at 4,800. That is definitely a tournament type play, but his consistency, his playing time can be a problem as well. So probably not a guy I look to in cash. Well, Simo's at 8,700. And again, tournaments there. While the process and Lillard, 96 for Embiid, 84 for Lillard. Both those guys have tournament upside and they have some level of cash sustainability. Let's have a look at the other sites to wrap this up here. On Yahoo for tournaments, Townsy, Drummond, Marcus Smart, Johnny Henson, the Muppet, Tone Tolliver, Frank Ntilikina, Ryan Anderson, Zach Collins, Mo Spates. And for cash, Terry Rozier, Tone Parker, Nene, Langston Galloway, Reggie Bullock, Malcolm Brogdon, Tyus Jones, Bismack Biyombo, Lord Alfred Payton, Ish Smith, Jim Butler, Dame Lillard, Joel Embiid, and Jim Harden. On Moneyball for tournaments, it's Benny Simmons. We've got Wigo, Johnny Henson, Reggie Bullock, Langston Galloway, Zach Collins. And for cash, Nene, Eric Gordon, Brogo, Tatum, Tyus, Bismack, Alfred, Ish Smith, Jim Butler, Carl Towns, and Yanni Adetokounmpo. You can put Jim Harden in there as well. And on Draft Stars for tournaments, it's Lillard, it's Leonard, it's John Simmons, Tone Tolliver, the Muppet, Langston Galloway, Mo Spates, Zach Collins. And for cash, Nene, Reggie Bullock, Jason Tatum, Bismack, Courtney Lee, Brogo, Ish Smith, Lord Alfred, Al Horford, Toby Harris, Kyrie Irving, Andre Drummond, Karl Anthony Towns, Joel Embiid, Yanni Adetokounmpo, and Jim Harden. We are done today, guys. Don't forget, for those two segments, I'm going to be putting tweets out for them tomorrow. Your player of the day you want me to discuss, whoever it is, I'll pick one of those. And then our question of the day as well. Doesn't have to be fantasy related. Probably prefer if it isn't, to be honest, just to mix the show up a bit. If you are listening to this on Apple Podcasts, give me a 5-star review. It is the best Christmas present you can give a man that lives in Australia. So please do that. Go and also find us on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify, and on YouTube, where you can subscribe, leave a comment, and give it a thumbs up. Find me, of course, on Twitter at redrock_beeble and at basketballmonster.com. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Dr. Michael Malone.